outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gym.
I got to parent my first episode of a kid playing hooky.
Okay. One of your kids?
One of my kids. So my daughter, Eliana, who is in kindergarten this year.
Yes, she, acting like a senior in high school.
Yes, that she is. And she decided that she was not feeling great. And so she needed to stay home yesterday. So Jess and I rearranged our schedules. And, you know, especially because of the way that her body works, whenever she tells me she's sick, I tend to give it a little bit more credence, because last time she told me she was sick, she had a ruptured appendix. So I try to give her a little bit of additional credibility when it comes to her expressions of feeling. Well, then I stayed at home, was working with her, and she was bouncing off the walls the entire day until like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then she laid down and took a nap, which is not characteristic for her. However, I think I did get suckered into my first day of hooky with my daughter.
Okay. Well, cool. And you're okay with outing her for doing that on a national podcast?
Yeah, I think she'll be all right.
International podcast?
I think she'll be okay. I think the if it was her senior year of high school or moving into her senior year of college, then maybe I'd be a little more hesitant. But kindergarten does not have quite the weight in my mind in regards to academic prowess.
First time I tried that, and I think it was probably about kindergarten, I tried to fake sickness because my brother was sick and he got to spend the day at home the day before. So yeah, I was feeling a little scratchy, sore throat. Blah, 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 so I decided, and mom said, great, because I were taking the other brother, the doctor, we'll take you too. And I went, okay, that was a mistake. I went to the doctor, got a shot in the butt for something, because my brother did. He said, well, he didn't have any symptoms yet, but he probably will. So I'm just going, I never did it again. It was not worth it.
See, I never considered playing hooky, because if I was indicating at all that I was healthy and I was doing well, then I was out on the ranch. So that was like, it was like, well, if you're feeling good enough to be up and around and causing us problems, then you're going to be out working if you're not going to be at school. And so I had that too. Very often. I was either deathly ill or I was in school.
No, you just, if you're staying home because you're sick, you gotta stay in bed and read, and you gotta do those kind of things. You can't be bouncing off the walls. That's just bad practice.
Exactly. It just doesn't sell it very well. So
yeah, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And welcome to this episode of The God Journey. Best thing you heard this week?
Man, I had a lot of best things I heard this week. However, I think the one that I want to pick is in my advanced counseling skills class, we were doing our final and they were presenting these projects that I had them do, and they created what are called reliquaries. And so they were special boxes that hold things of meaning for the individual. And so they created their box focused on specific things, and then they brought them to the class and they shared them and processed them. And one of my students brought what they created as a representation of their brain. And it was that really like thick, comfortable yarn. Have you seen this? It's like the really thick yarn that people make really soft blankets out of.
Yeah, I'm not really into yarn and knitting and all that stuff, but
that's fair. You gave up your crocheting stage. You're past that now.
Arthritis in the hands when you get
up. Oh, okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Fair enough. Well, so the student decided to crochet their project, and they crocheted their brain, and it was this really soft, really comfortable material. And their comment was, "This is representing my brain, and I just want to squeeze it." And I was dying laughing, especially because this student has navigated some pretty interesting challenges in their life. And so to be able to appreciate who they are and the way they think and the way they encounter in the world, it was very comical the way that they presented it, but it was one of the more powerful expressions of self-acceptance that I'd seen the student exhibit in class, and I was very proud of them and yet was laughing at the same time with them because it was just a really cool moment. So yeah, that was one of the best things that I heard this week.
So squeezing their brain was a sign of affection, not crush it to, okay.
Not crush it to destroy it. It was a appreciation for who they've been created to be and how they think and the way that they view the world.
Wow. Pretty wild. Yeah.
Cool. How about you?
I got one that's very personal. And then we'll go somewhere else.
Okay.
Many of you know, I talked last time, we're going to take Sarah to Disneyland because that's a place where she gets to have a childhood she didn't get to have when she was a little girl. And first few hours, we were in the California Adventure side of Disneyland complex. We were sitting in a pretty, and Disneyland for me is a pretty hokey place for the most part. You know, I know people love it. I don't love it, but I love it through Sarah's eyes. And we're sitting there watching this 3D movie music thing. And at one point I just stole a glance over at Sarah, and she's just, the look on her face of absolute rest and wonder and awe. And I was deeply touched by it. And then I think the father whispered in the back of my brain, "Thank you for bringing my daughter here." Hmm. And it undid me in the middle of the thing. It undid me. I know it sounds kind of, what, I don't know how that sounds. It's like, God would care that you took Sarah to Disneyland. I kind of think he did. And I think he was saying, thank you for bringing my daughter here that I could do for her something for him. And I'll tell you what it did. I was already set to go with Sarah to Disneyland and just whatever she wants to do, whatever part of the day, when you want to eat, when you want to ride, when you want to sit and just watch people, I'm with you. So whatever you want to do, I have nothing I want to do here. So I'm going to do everything you want to do. But that changed something in me. It was like, okay, she's here at God's desire, and I'm enabling that. And so I don't want to spoil that even in the littlest bit. And it made my heart much more invested in Sarah's experience and grateful that God would allow that to be part of our life.
So when you were there with her and that happened, you got that feedback in that moment, in that experience, did it shift from just simply enjoying Sarah to you experiencing joy as well?
Well, I was already experiencing joy. I experienced a lot of joy with Sarah's joy. So I'm not saying they're reticent and, oh crud, I got to spend these two stupid days at Disneyland. I'm not there. I'm there to really enjoy it with her. So I don't know that it did that. I was already enjoying it, but it amped up the enjoyment, I would say.
Oh, okay.
It felt like, man, I was doing something that God was grateful for. And what it reminded me of, a number of years ago, probably a decade and a half ago, I was in Florida, and a guy I was visiting, long story behind all this, but I'd been part of his, he'd been backsledding away from God because of a horrible church experience, and then wasn't even part of what I was doing, but I was having dinner with his brother. And so the brother invited this man to come be with us, who is not, you know, kind of not doing well spiritually at all. And we spent the night having dinner together and telling stories and laughing. And somehow that night engaged him to relook at the Father.
Hmm.
And he said, I've been with a lot of speakers for the church. You know, it's one of the things he did for the church was help speakers get around and wine and dine them and do whatever. He said, I've never met anyone like Wayne. He said, it re-engaged me that maybe there's hope. Maybe there's something inside God for him. Anyway, I came back there a number of years later to be part of a retreat that included a golf outing. And he called me. He wasn't part of that either, but he called me earlier and he said, could you stay on an extra day after you're here? And I said, what do you mean? He said, my wife and I would like to talk to you. And I said, yeah, I'll fly out Monday afternoon rather than Monday morning. He said, no, could you stay the whole day and fly out on Tuesday? And, okay, no one usually asks for that. So yeah, I'll go do it. What he had planned was we're driving by, and he picked me up Sunday afternoon and we're driving back to his house. We're going by the TPC at Sawgrass, which is a world famous golf course. As we're driving by, he says, you want to play there? And I went, oh, I'd love to play there sometime, but you got to know a member, it's $300. It's just not in my wheelhouse. And he said, how about 8:20 tomorrow? I said, what are you talking about? And he'd done through this whole thing of putting me on that golf course, getting permission to do it, going in and seeing somebody. Long story. But when I teed off the next morning at 8:20, this is Florida in August. It's 72 degrees is the high. It is low humidity. It is just a glorious day. Walking down the first fairway, God just started talking to me about some stuff in my life and what I'd been through. And because the guy I was playing with was a doctor working a salesman working two doctors. So okay. I told him, I said, you can leave me alone as much as you want. And he said, I really need to. So I like playing alone. So I'm walking up fairways and the entire round is just an unloading of God's heart into mine after some of the painful things I've been through. And when I got done, he picked me up at the golf course because he wasn't playing. And we're going back to his house. I said, thank you. And he said, thank you. He said, it's not from me. I said, it's not from you. He says, no, it's from your father. I'm looking really, my dad wouldn't pay $300 for round of golf. I'm like, no. What are you talking about, dude? And he goes, not that father. I said, what do you mean? He said, when I was driving by here last week and knew you were coming to spend some time with us, he said, I felt like, first time I've heard God in a long time, but I felt like what he said is, can you put Wayne on that golf course? I want to play around with him. And I turned to him and said, it was exactly like that. I never saw him hit a shot, but I feel like I played a round of golf with God. He was there the whole thing. And so when God put that, I'm like, thank you for bringing my daughter here. It went back to that. This man's actions put me in a place for God to engage me. And my actions would put Sarah in a place for God to engage her. And that's just, all of that was just so special. So for the last day and a half we were there, it was really like, this is part of something special. And I get to be part of it with him. So that was cool.
Wow. Cool. That's incredible.
It is. And there's so much more around the other golf story I didn't share. People came back. I left a book for the lady that put me on. When I was playing the 17th hole, I felt like one of the things God put on my heart is, get a copy if he loves me, sign it to the lady who put you on here. And I did. She wasn't there. I took the book in the pro shop. She's on vacation. I left it for her. Week and a half later, I get an email from a guy who's the husband of that woman. He came home on Monday after their vacation, and this book is laying on the counter. And he goes, what's this book doing here? She says, I don't know. Some guy left it at the golf course for me. And he goes, really? Because he said, when I saw your book, I wanted to throw it through a wall because that whole God stuff, I hate it. He loves me. Mm-hmm. And he said he just picked it up and glanced at it and then got hooked reading it. And he said, he's typing me this email. He said, I read through the whole thing. And he said, I can't tell you. I'm sitting here in tears writing you. And my wife is over on the couch reading it for the first time and she's crying. Tell you a story. 15 years ago, five month old daughter took her to the hospital with some kind of medical issue. The hospital made a mistake and she died. And the church we were going to at the time said, if you'd had faith in God, you wouldn't have taken her to the hospital and she wouldn't have died. And so we left church, God, everything then. 15 years later, they were reading your book. And if this is who God is, we're coming back to him. So that was the byproduct of the round of golf.
Gosh.
Yeah, crazy.
Oh,
love that though.
A good friend of mine in the Twin Cities has this phrase that he uses that I deeply love because he uses it to describe both the way that, or I guess the type of life that God invites us into, as well as what it means to walk with Father. He calls it the wild blue adventure. And that, like, man, as you're describing that to me, like the first thing that popped into my head was that's the wild blue adventure. You can't predict it. You can't plan it. You get to be a part of it. You get to explore it. You get to find joy in the midst of it. You get to love on others in the midst of it, but you could never manufacture it if you ever wanted to. It has to come completely out of the authorship of relationship and love.
And it just unfolds and you recognize it when it's happening. You don't orchestrate it to happen because then it just got your fingerprints all over it, which is a nightmare.
Well, then it's not genuine. It's not real. It's a rote box experience instead of an authentic spontaneity of relationship.
For sure. Hey, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Have you read Dan Brown's Secret of Secrets?
I have.
Okay. Did you enjoy it?
I did. I really like his stuff. I find his stuff very stimulating. And in fact, usually when I'm reading something of his, he'll talk about some kind of technology or a book or a new science, and I'll go research it because he does enough of his own research in his books that usually it's grounded in some level of truth. And so I'm like, okay, I want to go find out where is he getting this information? What's the source behind it? And yeah, I love reading his stuff. sometimes there's stuff that I really have a hard time with, or I don't necessarily agree with. But even in that, I love the challenge of it, of like, okay, what, where do we go from here? What do I believe about this? Father, what do you say about this? So yeah, love his stuff.
Dan Brown is the author of The Da Vinci Code and a number of other books that sometimes play with religion in a way that ticks off people, religious folks especially. I too have enjoyed his books. They're great mysteries, and they're, it's not just a great mystery, it's a puzzle being solved by the lead character.
Yes.
And it's all grounded in history. And like you said, a lot of his stuff, it's all research. So what he's saying is true, even though he's made up a plot to kind of go in and through all that. Well, I caught a part of this in his newest book, and I've not finished the book yet, but I caught this part of it, and this absolutely rattled me. I had a spiritual experience reading a Dan Brown book, I'll tell you.
Hmm.
And here was the part. It was talking about the quote that leapt off the page at the end of this is, "Separation is humankind's greatest shared delusion," which is not only a great statement on its own, but it starts off with one of my favorite things in nature, which is murmuration. I grew up in the Central Valley where we do have starlings, and we were always afraid the starlings were going to eat the grapes because they go in these big flocks and everything. So it wasn't necessarily beautiful at the time because, oh my gosh, that's a huge flock of starlings. But they get up and go in these huge clouds of birds, just make these amazing patterns in the sky where we have thousands upon thousands of birds flying in coordination with each other, or so it appears. This comes up in the book, though. Catherine, one of the lead characters, had researched the synchronized murmurations of starlings and declared the phenomenon to be a scientific proof of an invisible connection between living things. Now, I know this is, I don't know for sure where this is going, but I assume this is going to some kind of new agey worldly kind of, we're all connected, maybe not, I don't know. But she says separation is an illusion, as she pulled up this mesmerizing video of starlings moving as one. And when that, I saw a video years ago, and I'm going to put a link on it if I can find it again at the bottom of the podcast, of these starlings doing the synchronized whatever over this lake, and this girl's in the front of this canoe, and she's watching this whole thing, and the person behind them is filming it. And at the end of it, she just kind of turns toward the camera, and her eyes light up, and she goes, "Wow." And if I can find that video, because I remember that, that's exactly how I feel when I see that kind of thing. And she said, this phenomenon is called behavioral synchronization. It occurs all throughout nature. Some traditional scientists claim behavioral synchronization is actually just an illusion, that these organisms are simply reacting to one another so rapidly that the delay is imperceptible. So there's like a leader and people are all kind of following that. She said, unfortunately, a pair of high-speed video cameras linked to atomic clocks at the front and back of a school of fish have shown that the alleged reaction time is faster than the speed of light. So it's not what they're seeing. If you view a murmuration of starlings, not as many individual birds, but rather as one complete organism, then the synchronization is to be expected. The starlings are moving as one because they are one, an interconnected system. No separation, much like the individual cells in your body, which form the integrated whole that is you. We mistakenly picture ourselves as isolated individuals when in fact we are part of a much larger organism. The loneliness we feel is because we can't see the truth. We are in fact integrated into the complete whole. Separation is humankind's greatest shared delusion. Man, and I got to that part and just kind of leaned back, and I could just see rising in my mind's eye, just rising from the earth, this, not thinking about all humanity interconnected, I was really thinking about the bride of Christ rising to be all that she needs to be, particularly if we are, and I think we are, at the end of the age. It was a moment. I've never seen how is the body of Christ going to have impact in the world when it is so divided and so at odds with each other, and then doing stupid things politically, both left and right. Okay. How is the world ever going to know? And it was like God has already sown. I've heard and taught my whole life, church is an organism, not an organization, even as we were an organization, even as we were living the opposite of that, because we saw it could work. Yeah, like the old way of there's one lead starling and all of them are following that starling, and that's why it works that way. And this is not that. This is people equipped in their hearts to live, to love, and justice and following Jesus nudges. And that will become, if it's not already, that will become an organism as magnificent before the world as a flock of starlings.
I cannot believe you just shared that. I'm honestly a little speechless at the moment, because when I read that book, one of the key elements that really stood out to me was this is the bride of Christ embodied. That when the idea of this interconnection amongst the bride of Christ, that we don't know everything that the body is doing and the different cells and the different pieces, but God does, and it is moving in a whole unlike anything we can imagine in regards to his spirit moving with themes and perception and pursuit of the world. As I was reading this book, one of the things that I reflected on was, gosh, that is how the bride lives in sync and an embodiment in dwelling with the Spirit. And this book, like, as you go on, like, there are some very powerful illustrations of what it looks like to be indwelled and to be present with the Spirit of God. Like that,
and, not intentionally, because that's not Dan Brown's point of view.
No, not at all. Yeah.
No plot spoilers here. I still need some work here.
I'm not going to go anymore.
I've been a busy guy lately.
I'm just going to say it, like, this book, for me anyway, was very, very powerful, because it talks about we both have a huge heart for community. This is something that I'm talking with students about all the time, is what does it look like to create authentic community in the spaces that we're in? I literally just got done grading a paper that I have students reflecting on the CDC's report of the epidemic of loneliness. And yet it is, when you read that quote, I was like, it is the great delusion. Like, because we are connected, there is this incredible engagement that is happening. And even thinking about the body keeps the score and how there's this interaction and this engagement, like, we separate the body from the mind, from the spirit. And yet, no, they're an intertwined, interfunctioning system that is a whole organism that is connected to one another. And so just the interconnection, both of the body, mind, and spirit with the world around us, with the people that are around us, with nature, and not in like a, whatever, weird Eastern mysticism way, but no, there's a genuine connection that's taking place. And I think God's spirit is authoring that. And it is wild.
Yeah, when I see that happen, when I see believers in sync with each other, not because they're in the same tent or following the same leader or author or book or whatever, but they're really tuned to Jesus. And when you interact that kind of thing, when you interface with it, it's amazing, which is why in Finding Church, I wrote about unmanaged community. That it's community, if you try to manage it, it becomes the illusion of community. Real community, real connections between people who are nudged together by a common embrace of the Spirit is not necessarily everybody's doing, even in a murmuration of starlings, they're not all doing the same thing at the same moment, but it makes up a symphony of light and beauty and all of that, because they're each moving as part of one thing rather than individual. And I, particularly for those of us who've been unconnected from religious institutions for a long time and may feel like, gosh, we're alone, and a lot of religious communities base their connection on a need to belong. So there's this belonging thing. And when you're outside of it, you feel like, okay, well, I don't know that I belong now. Am I safe? Am I doing what God wants me to do? And what right now, learning to live inside of love and learning to live responsive to him is the preparing for whatever this becomes toward the end of the age. And if people had the sense that even though I might be alone, I don't know people around me doing this, I am part of an organism so much larger than me that's invested deeply in Jesus. It's one of the phrases that's in the Old Testament that I mark every time I go through it, Proverbs 30, the locusts have no king, yet they advance in formation. And this is the things of King is saying, is four small but wise things. And one of them is the locust, who can fly in formation but not have a leader to follow. And I think that reflects what God wants to have in the body of Christ, which even John 10, I mean, so much this has just grown in my heart since I had this experience. John 10, they will be one flock with one shepherd.
Yes.
And the fact that we're not one flock is because we're not have one shepherd. When I first began Lifestream.org and the internet was becoming a deal, and you would interface with other people doing similar stuff, it was always, you've got to build a community online. Call it a network, call it a community, call it being part of the team. It's what engages people. They'll get signed up. They want to belong. I had no ability to do that. Every time I even thought about it, my yuck meter would flutter. And I'm going, man, I realize that's important to get people committed, dependent, connected to, but I couldn't do it. I just, there was something in me that just said, I just don't think that's what God has in mind. In the middle of all this, this murmuration of starlings and reading this and just kind of processing this with God, unmanaged community, John 17, that they may all be one as we are one, that was Jesus' greatest prayer, that we would be one organism, again, not because we're managed by prophets or apostles or some human being trying to control this thing, but because we've learned to be dependent on Jesus, mm-hmm. and we've learned to follow him, and the naturalness of love, that this will take shape in a way that's beautiful. And the middle of that, and this, I know this is incredibly self-serving, but I'm sharing it because it's not for me alone. God, I felt like God spoke to me and he said, thank you for not organizing my people into a system.
Mm.
And I went, whoa, that was touching.
Yeah.
But it was also not just for me. It was for others who've made that same choice, who realized I could benefit from carving out my own little part of the flock, but I'm not going to. I'm going to let the flock be in Jesus's hands. And I'm going to encourage people to live inside that reality instead of provide an illusion of it in some kind of organized network, or which never really becomes much if it's an internet thing anyways. People sign up and they get mailings and they get financial appeals and they get all that kind of stuff. But it really is it enough for God? Is it enough for Jesus to really be the head of his church, and for us to be one organism flowing in his moving, flowing in his life without trying to, without working at it? This has captured my heart.
Man, I love that was your experience with it. Like, 'cause that literally, I was listening to the book when I was coming back from California and was like, man, this is okay, Lord, this is got your bride written all over it, and how you see your, like, gosh.
And how are we with a secular book written just to entertain that God would insert himself, almost like the Matrix movie, this other places, or some of the Star Wars stuff. God just inserts himself in literature that's not even specifically aimed at the church.
Well, and again, unmanaged community, right? Like, that's the beauty of it is that they are connecting to and pointing towards kingdom truth, which is the life of Christ. And so it doesn't matter, like, even if it's in a secular book or some Hollywood movie or whatever, there's a reason why it's resonating, because it's resonating with our spirit. there's a reason why it's going beyond our mind and engaging with our heart in such a meaningful way. Yeah. You've already been experiencing this and living this.
I have.
Because when I think about it, I think about all the different relationships and connections and conversations that I've had with people, that there's a flavor of, oh, they're familiar. There is an alignment here. There is a familiarity here. There is a shared vision, a shared heart. Even though I never have had a conversation with this person before, there is a connection here that goes beyond just our current present space. That's being informed by something a lot bigger than both of us. Like, I think about, you know, the retreat that I was on in Florida, and some people, like, there was a web of interpersonal relationships and connections there. And yet some of us were meeting each other for the first time ever. And yet there was this deep resonance of shared vision, of shared heart, of shared desire. And gosh, it was wild, because it was like, oh no, even the conversation of, man, it seems like I've known you for a really long time when you're having that first conversation. Well, yeah, because we're resonating and we're engaging in community with the spirit that we've been walking with for a long time and that we're growing in our understanding and our knowledge of. And we can begin to recognize that flavor, that presence, that engagement in others around us. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, I've been doing that for years, getting off plane somewhere and get with people. Some, there's this, that, like you said, that immediate connection. We know the same God. It doesn't mean we know the same things or act in the same way, but there's a commonality of heart and purpose and shaping of Jesus in us.
Yes.
And then you other places that just isn't there yet. And it really was a good reminder for me, this whole thing, equipping people to live inside of love. And equipping people to be responsive to the nudges of Jesus rather than taking the shortcut to tell people what they should do. Even if you've got really good wisdom about, hey, this would be important for you to do this. But as soon as I turn them on to Wayne's telling you what to do, they're going to stop listening to the one who wants to lead them into that life and goodness. And at times it's been kind of hard not to just give the immediate answer because that would be so much quicker. But I do get emails, and I've had quite a few since I've been reading that part of the book and just thinking of this murmuration thing. I've gotten an email from people that don't know this at all. It's the first time I've talked about it publicly, who have just said, I really thank you that when I wanted answers from you, you turned me to Jesus. And now I've learned to follow him. And I, man, that blesses me in a way it didn't 2 weeks ago.
Man, you think about, though, how deeply invested the enemy is in that delusion.
Yeah.
Right? Like, oh my gosh, if the entire bride of Christ knew that, resonated with that, lived in that, it would be a very different world. And I think the enemy would be very much on his heels in some pretty significant ways.
Yeah, I think so too. And this would be, you know, if people have cornered off a bit of the body of Christ, this would be a good time to shift from being directional to equipping, to equip people to follow Jesus, not follow your vision, not follow your plan. I remember Kevin Smith, my friend from Australia, who passed away a few years ago, he would say, first time I met him, he'd say, you know what I think Jesus is saying to his church today, or saying to what Jesus is saying today, I'm taking my church back. And why so many things have collapsed since then, and things that have been false structures, quote unquote, for the body of Christ, have collapsed and imploded with the lie and illusion that they are.
Yeah.
Just because Jesus, we can look at that and say, oh man, humanity is horrible, and look all these leaders have done to destroy. Actually, it's Jesus taking his church back. And I love that image of, you know what, these are mine. These are my people. These are my kids. And I'm taking them back to me from all the places where others have tried to carve them up into their own clubs. And I would behoove us to cooperate with that, I think.
Man, can you imagine what God sees in regards to, like, if you're looking at the bride of Christ globally, what does the murmuration of the remnant around the world look like? Like that, like, I'm just trying to get, like, there's like kind of this idea swirling around in my head of what a murmuration of the remnant of Christ in the world looks like. And it, talk about wild. I mean, gosh, I mean.
And that's what I saw when I was contemplating this. I saw, like, looking out in the fields of my childhood, and you see nothing, sky, mountains, whatever. And all of a sudden, rising out of the vineyards and rising off the trees, comes this huge flock of birds that begins to ascend together. And I saw that as not starlings. I saw that as the body of Christ in the world. What this murmuration is, it's gone on behind the scenes in closeted ways, in ways that, you know, it's in fits and starts. But I think the time's coming when it's just going to rise from every place at once.
Yeah.
And just be a reflection of glory. No human being could orchestrate this. This has to be a work of the Spirit. And to encourage those of you who feel lost and separated and disconnected, that's the lie. You really are connected to something beautiful. And the prophecy of Isaiah 61 about arise, shine, or 60, arise, shine, for your light has come and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. I think there's a reflection of that in what Jesus is doing in his family around the world that will defy all the systems we've created that are trying to make it happen and trying to be the coordinating point for the great revival, whatever. It won't be that way. It will be all these people who have learned to follow Jesus. We don't even know. They're not connected to us in any way. And it will just rise in a way that the bride will take her appearance in the world. Mm. And I saw a glimpse of that. And it undid me. I just went, oh, God, please let it be. Let it be.
Oh, see, and that was the exact same lament that my heart just had as we were talking about this was, wow, like just the heart prayer of let this be, Father. Like, come, like what does it look like, Lord, for me to continue in being a member of that, of helping encourage that, catalyze that, facilitate opportunities for that? What does it look like to participate in that work, and not in an organizing way, not in a structuring way, but to continue to hold space for people to be able to encounter the love and life of Christ?
Yeah, and that's way more relaxing than it is intentionally trying to make it happen.
Oh, gosh, yes.
It's that unforced rhythm of grace. The more you try to be part of that, I think the harder it's going to be. The more you can learn to relax into the unforced rhythms of grace and relax into the reality of Jesus in your life, mm-hmm. and trust his love for you as whatever happens unfolds. When you lean into that space, you're going to find yourself part. I don't think the starlings are kind of meeting the day before saying, hey, let's do a commemoration tomorrow, man. Why don't you take the back? I'll take the front. You take about 50% of them, do this. There's no strategizing. It just, there's something in them that takes all these individual birds who are fending for food and whatever, and all of a sudden they are an organism that is demonstrated. This is fascinating to me, that this is not a flock of bird following leaders. This is a spontaneous, every bird doing what it sees to do, but it makes this beautiful picture of, when you see it, there's something even, they take the shape of a dolphin or something. They're not trying to do that, but just as light and shadow and a bunch of them in one place, and it's so fluid and so beautiful. Man, it takes me back to my childhood, because I saw probably a dozen of these in my childhood. I've not seen any since I moved to Los Angeles. There's nothing down in this area. But man, when I lived up there, it was something to behold. And I remember pulling my car off at times just to stop and watch it, because, man, I don't want to move on from this. This is spectacular. And I think some way that, and we've heard for people for decades, these prophecies about nameless, faceless people that are not structured and not people who are famous and have made themselves known, unknown folks all over the world rising in a beautiful display of God's glory rather than of human convention. And man, I can't wait to see what that looks like.
I think the term unmanaged community is so fitting to that, because I would say that it's managed, not even necessarily managed, but authored. Because I think God is very much in the authoring and the development and the growth of this community. But by human standards, by human perspective, it is very much unmanaged. It is very much unincorporated by some structural system. And yet, it's everywhere. It's like, how are you, so, like, I mean, the random places that I bump into and encounter this happening without any expectation of even, like, at times not even looking for it. And then all of a sudden, oh, here it is in my lap again. Like, okay, here we go.
Yeah. Even some of the people I've met in this X2x2 thing, it just, you find a commonality, people coming out of a pretty stringent cult.
Yeah.
And yet the heart that seems to be prepped already in them as they fly away from the thing that has contained them. And I think that'll be true for a lot of people who, they've been learning this even though they don't know it. They're not God Journey listeners or into the whole living love journey or whatever, but Jesus has been sowing this in their heart, and they'll be ready to fly when that time comes. And I agree with you, unmanaged, and even says in the Bible, unmanaged by humanity.
Yes.
It's not unstructured by Jesus, who's at work in people's lives, and he can, the whole building rises to become a temple in which God can dwell. I mean, those from Paul, from Jesus, that they may be one, even as we are one. That's the purpose of the oneness. It wasn't just, let's practice unity. It was, boy, the oneness of being able to flow with what Jesus is doing. Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. Those are things that we don't control. We can't make happen. Like you, I see it in bits and pieces almost wherever I go. Yeah. Can you imagine when it's something as visible as the whole world to behold what Jesus has done that no human being can take credit for?
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of it, is it is so beyond the capacity of humanity that there's no way someone can take credit for it. And I think that's the challenge, is that often in our more structured Sunday morning gathering experiences, God shows up in a community or in a group of people or in a space, and there is that flavor, there is that life. And they're like, okay, this happened. Now we have to maintain this. Now we're in control of it. Now we have to structure it. Now we have to put parameters around it and keep it going. And it's like, you just stole every quality attribute out of the life that you just were blessed by. And I get the heart behind desiring to be able to keep that going. But again, if you think that that's on your shoulders, then not only do you have the weight of doing something you can't do, but it loses the life that it had, because the author isn't involved.
And we'll reproduce the events.
Yes.
But we'll just end up with an illusion where people are going, this is not what that was, but they won't admit it because everybody else is doing it. The idea of leaving something unstructured seems to just defy humanity. You know what I mean? Particularly in a religious way. We want to, and I think part of it's driven by the need to try to help people. Part of it's driven by, if I corner a certain part of the people, that's an income stream for me. I think that's also inherent in that. But if we could learn to let go of what we think we're doing for Christ, and let him live in us and through us by responding in a daily way to his nudges and inclinations and watching for that community as she expresses itself in the world. Mm. Man, to me, that's when Jesus prays, God, that they may be one, even as we are, you and them and them and me. There it is. It's not external. It's inside. Then the oneness we have, like when you and I met, like when other relationships I have, the oneness is already there when we meet. It's not we created it over time.
Yeah.
And that is beautiful. And I can't wait to see how this takes shape in the world to come.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.